Where to Hunt podcast. It's okay.
Hi, I'm Dan Small, host of Outdoor Wisconsin, and I listen to Where to Hunt.
Man, it's okay.
I'm Kurt Geyer with Working Class Bowhunter. I listen to Where to Hunt podcast, and it's decent.
It's all right.
Hey, this is Bud Fisher with Catching Deers, and I think the Where to Hunt podcast is
all right.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Where to Hunt podcast, the podcast that connects public land hunting enthusiasts, aka the okayest podcast in the Midwest, coming at you from the Okayest Hunter podcast studio. Head on over to okayesthunter.com. By golly, head on over there. Look at this cool hat I'm wearing, this little tiny antler. You can use code W2HPODCAST and you're going to save yourself 10% off of the okayest hunting gear that ever was made. High quality clothing, though, I will say. Tri-blend, leather patch hats, stickers. They only have a couple of things, and it's okay.
Shirts are comfortable. Stickers are sticky.
Stickers are sticky, yeah. Yeah, I'll play some bumpers. How about that? I don't know if I've done a bumper in a little while. Right?
Do it.
Which one is this? Let's do this one.
Whether you're at work, in a tree stand, or simply waking up, it's important to be alert. There's no better way to get there than with Backwoods Grind Coffee. Ground fresh for every order, delivered straight to your door. Backwoods Grind Coffee.
Okay. And you got to use code, because I've never done it. And now it's just a thing. So now it is just how it is. It's W2H Podcast for 10% off.
That's real hard.
For Backwoods Grind. I know.
Difficult. Very difficult.
We keep it okay here. Look, our latest partner to the family is Spartan Forge. So I think they're making their rounds now. They got a couple of like brand ambassadors, Garrett Prawl, Johnny Stewart, I think, and a couple of others that I'm just not
Greg Litzinger, the bow hunting fiend.
Thank you. Yep. So, you know, happy to join the party with all those folks and use their platform and product. Head on over to spartanforge.ai. And you can try their stuff out with our discount. It's W2H. You're going to save 20%. And if you don't know what it is, it's an AI platform that helps you predict when deer are going to be on hoof and how they're going to navigate certain terrain based on a data model for millions of data points collected from deer collared data from different universities around the country and a bunch of other stuff that's super intelligent. But that's the gist of it, for my mouth at least.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
We did do an episode with those guys, with Bill Thompson with Spartan Forge. You have to go back and find it. I don't know what it is off the top of my head, but it's in the archives, and we did it, like, I don't know, last season.
Yeah.
Or whatever, the end of 2020. Speaking of the end of 2020, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
In the new year, you can head on over to fleetfarm.com because you can't use the discount code in the store, but you can do an in-store pickup, and you know, you can buy online. If you use code W2H10, you're going to save 10% off. I know Fleet Farm does like a lot of stuff with coupons anyways, but it's a good way for them to track that, you know, hey, maybe, you know, I heard you guys on the Where to Hunt podcast, so why not pass along the discount? You can get your hunting licenses there, which I failed to do for my turkey tag. You can fill up on gas there, you can get snacks there, beer, bush lattes, gear. I mean, they got it all, man. I got a lot of Christmas stuff from Flea Farm.
That's good.
Yeah, that's what I got. And I just poured up some Drop Time Spirits, by the way. So cheers to that.
Cheers to that.
The official drink of Deer Camp. Or Deer Camp in a bottle. I don't know. Mm-hmm. We just kind of made that up. And, you know, our friends at Vector, we love those guys. So I think the discount code's still good, but we're going to do some more collaboration this year. So you can still use code WHERE, the number 2, the word HUNT, for 10% off, as far as I'm aware.
Perfect.
And we're both shooting Vector for life.
Well, we'll see.
We do love the Vector arrows.
We do.
I think I covered everybody.
Yeah, I think that's it.
All right. All right, Greg. So,
what do we have?
Well, you want to get in right away? You want to tell me about how you're doing first?
I got nothing.
Yeah. You know what I did before you got here?
I don't know.
I took
use the bathroom?
No, I took the super long pull and knocked off all the icicles so you didn't die on the way in.
Oh, that's why all that ice and salt is all over the place.
It was out of control.
Still like a landmine field out there.
I was like, I'm going to die doing this. I'm like smacking them. They're all falling down in my head.
I had to roof rake the whole house today, so we're starting to see some rather large icicles.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty gnarly out there. So, yeah, sorry. We do have a guest. Clay Thurman, also known as Buck Collector Clay on YouTube. Welcome to the show, man.
Hi, fellas.
Howdy. What's going on?
Well, it's always a pleasure to be on the Jackie Bushman Show. I appreciate the invite.
Man, we're glad to have you. You're out of Nebraska, and I think that's in the middle part of the country, and that's where the hunting public does a lot of their stuff, potentially?
Yeah. Yeah, they've been pretty hard on old Nebraska lately.
Yeah. How does that make you feel?
There's a lot of people out here, man. I've never hunted in PA, but I imagine it's kind of the same thing now. It's like everywhere you go, there's just lots and lots of people. I said on a different podcast once that imagine it's like an Irish clown car, man.
Yeah. That's a lot of people in one car. How many were there?
Eight.
That's nuts. Was it a minivan? Like, where did they put their gear? No,
they had two trucks and they were driving around together. But also, those guys were awesome. Like, I want to say that, you know, they were really awesome. They actually helped me recover a deer that I had shot earlier in the season. So without them, I would have had a really rough day.
Holy cow.
Well, that's what hunters are supposed to do, help each other out.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Yeah. That was pretty awesome little encounter I had with those guys.
So tell us, dude, like, I don't know, a little bit about yourself. I think you're a listener of the show. You're also on the Working Class Bow Hunter podcast team, the WCBA team. So you're known, like, you were just on another podcast. I think The Outdoor Drive, we know those guys pretty well. Tell us, what you're all about over there in Nebraska.
I'm pretty ate up with shooting deer with a bow. I can say that there's not much else that I do. I mean, I like hunting bourbon in the off season, but beyond that, I deer hunt and I shoot my bow. That's what I do. I mean, I've got a wife and three daughters, but they're not old enough to hunt yet. So I'm pretty serious about it. I mean, it was in my wedding vows, so. Tell us more about that.
How was it? Do you remember it verbatim or like the gist of it?
Oh, no, but I mean, the gist, of course, was it was basically, you know, the preacher thought that it was really important that we had discussed things in advance, you know, so that there were no surprises. And my wife, who's awesome, by the way, it's not like I have to try real hard. She's just pretty amazing, but she knew right away that November was a very important time, and she's always welcome to come along, but I think the gist was, you're never allowed to make me feel bad for going hunting and anything like that, but you can always come. So
Does she join you ever?
That was basically it.
Did she ever come with you out in the woods?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, not so much anymore. Kids kind of ruin your life in that aspect in the very first part when they're as young as mine are, you know, until they really get older to get into it. But taking them on blood trails is my favorite part. She's killed a good deer with a bow and a couple good ones with a rifle. She just doesn't have a ton of time since we're originally from Central Illinois. So when we moved out here, lack of grandmas really puts a hamper on whether you have a babysitter or not, whether both people in the relationship can get out there. So
sure.
Remember that, bow hunters, before you move away from your families.
That's funny, dude. I think, man, I try to give my wife like a good idea, and I'm not even as hardcore as a lot of people. I think I've indexed a lot higher now, at least about like my time in the woods and my passion towards it compared to when we first started dating. But I had her come with me one time and she's like, that was so boring. I'm never going to go again. She's like, I don't get it. You just sit there. I'm sorry. That's what happens. You sit there and you know,
let's just say it's not for everybody.
But, you know, she knows what I do out there.
I went on a mule deer hunting trip 3 days after my second daughter was born.
Wow. Good for you. At least you waited for her to be born. That's good.
Well, she doesn't know I wasn't there.
That's true.
She's not upset with me now. She loves me.
That's pretty great, dude. That's a good perspective. I had another question for you. Bourbon hunting. Are you drinking something right now?
Yeah. Right now I'm drinking, I've poured myself 1 ounce of Blood Oath Pack 5.
Oh, I've never heard of that.
It is, I giggled like a 14-year-old girl at a One Direction concert when I found it. So it was pretty, this is a solid 175, 180 inch buck in comparison.
Oh, shit.
So I'm pretty happy with it.
We're drinking, have you heard of the Drop Tine Spirits?
Yeah, I've heard about bourbon? It a bunch. I always see you drinking it, but I've never had it.
It's pretty good. I think it's good, but I'm not, you know,
and it's
super
bourbon, right?
It is.
Yeah,
it is.
It's
yep.
a bourbon.
It's, what do they say here? Bourbon whiskey finished in brandy barrels. 46% alcohol by volume, so it's 92 proof. And they're relatively new.
So technically, it's not bourbon anymore. It was bourbon, but it's not anymore.
Interesting. Bourbon whiskey, yeah. So
that's the Pack 5 is the same way. 33% of the Pack 5 was aged in an old rum cask. But it all 3 1/3 ended up or began as bourbons. One was a 15-year, a 12-year, and I believe a 12-year, 11-year, and a 9-year. All three put together, they sourced three different barrels,
Damn.
And the third one was aged in rum barrels, which gives it like an orange or a citrus taste, a little bit of coconut. It's pretty cool.
That sounds good. I'm just getting into it, man, and it's a problem because. If you try something that has like, if it's really expensive and you go from that, then it's like, well, damn it. No, I don't want to buy this, you know, $40 bottle. I want the $200 bottle, but I'm not buying a $200 bottle. So I guess I'll just stick with $40 bottles.
You know what, man, at risk of derailing us, that bourbon is quite a thing. It's like the poor man's good stuff because bourbon as a whole is not that expensive. And it's obviously, maybe not obviously if people don't know what makes bourbon bourbon, but bourbon is the only American thing. It's like scotch can't be scotch unless it comes from Scotland.
Yep,
well,
yep.
Bourbon can't be bourbon unless it's made in the United States. You could pick up an entire distillery and somehow transport it over to Japan and make the same stuff, and it's not bourbon anymore. It's just Japanese whiskey. So it's got to be 51% corn. That's what makes bourbon bourbon. It has to be aged for a minimum of 2 years in a new charred oak barrel. There's basically five things other than a sixth thing would be made in the U.S. that make it bourbon. And it's kind of like the blues, you know, in the sense that America doesn't have a lot of stuff that's ours. You know,
right. No, you're totally right.
And bourbon
yep.
is it's one of those things.
Oh my God, this is great.
I just learned something very important tonight. Yeah. I mean,
forget deer hunting.
My night is over. It's all done.
This is
podcast
great.
Over. I learned what I needed to learn, and that's it.
Greg, why didn't you bring a glass up?
I joke a bit because I'm, I'm a red blooded American, and you know, I put my hand over my heart unknowingly, accidentally, every time that there's somebody's singing the national anthem, it's just inbred into me. And so when I see somebody drinking a Canadian whiskey, I really give them hell.
That's pretty funny.
Why aren't you drinking bourbon? You know, my buddies say, hey man, rye's really good. You ought to try this rye. And I'm not doing it. Sorry. I drink bourbon. Why? That's America. That's why.
I think maybe you gave me shit for drinking scotch at one point. Maybe it was someone else, but it sounds like it was you. It sounds like it could have been you. And I think that actually like stuck in my brain. I was like, man, I think he's got a point. Like I should probably, you know, drink some bourbon. So here I am.
I noticed that shortly after I gave you shit, there was, you had stopped doing that and then you were drinking the Drop Tine.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was,
I don't
it was
know
so
if
funny.
That had
well, those
to do,
guys,
but I doubt it.
They showed up in my radar somehow, and I was like, you guys, I drink scotch and bourbon on my show every Tuesday. I feel like this is a match made in heaven, right? Or something. Like, we should be friends. And they're like, well, yeah, let's do this. We'll send you some booze and tell us what you think. I was like, okay. And so I got some vodka of theirs, which is all corn-based vodka. I have some of their
moonshine.
Their moonshine, which is all apple.
base? No, it's not all apple base. If you read it, it's apple and corn. It's it's what
mostly bourbon. Apple.
Yeah, it's a nice little nightcap. It's really what
and then
it
the
is.
And then the drop time bourbon is kind of like their signature thing. They're pretty new, man. They've only been around for like maybe a year or a little bit more than that, and they're getting some traction in some other states now, which is cool.
Good for them.
Yeah. Yeah, neat company. But, you know, we could talk about that for a while, which is totally cool. I mean, look, I'm kind of checked out for the moment. Greg's still checked in, chasing some tenderloins or whatever he's after out there. Big Buck McGee, I don't know what he's got going on. But he's still chasing them with his bow in the cold. But, dude, you have quite the history here of putting deer down. So, like, walk us through that real quick.
You mean from the beginning?
I mean, yeah, let's spend a little bit of time in the beginning and then more time towards the end.
Okay.
way to be vague.
I started off, right? Well, let's broaden this out a bit, he says. I guess I started hunting by myself. Obviously, my father started me out, but I started hunting by myself for squirrels and such when I was probably 7. Killed my first deer in Illinois with a shotgun when I was 10. Killed my first deer with a bow in Illinois when I was 11. Killed my first buck in Illinois with a bow when I was 12. Didn't really decide to start hunting big deer. When young men turn a certain age, their mind tends to go to one thing. So I spent my time playing pool because obviously that was the thing I'm talking about. So I played pool for a long time, and then right in around 2007, I decided to try and hunt big deer. And that was like when trail cameras were kind of in their heyday, you know, Lee and Tiffany were still getting close, back with the old theme song, which was much better than the current theme song, if you remember. But at that point I had success, and since 2007, I've killed like 16, what I would call trophy deer. And, you know, and that's anywhere, you know, several deer in the 170s and 60s, 50s, and a few under 150. And all but two of those were with a rifle, or excuse me, were with a bow. So I'm loving every bit of it. I live for it all year, and I think really hard about it every single time. I start getting nightmares and, you know, mid to late August about missing deer and things like that. In 2011, I moved from Illinois to Nebraska, and then had to make a hard transition to mule deer when EHD hit all the deer in Illinois. It's hard enough going back and trying to hunt family farms, you know, from two states away, but it's even harder when all the deer dead from EHD, like they were in 2013. That's kind of a little synopsis there of me.
Sure. That's a good synopsis.
What brought you to Nebraska?
I work for a railroad.
Okay.
So
like, how did
I,
you...
I came here for work and...
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I said I came here for work and immediately that year started working really, really hard to try and find ground and knocking doors and you know, doing all the things that diehards do, and that non-diehards look at those diehards and say, how do you handle that ground? You know, I'd kill deer like that if I had that ground. Well, it's not like I was bequeathed to the ground. I went and found it. You know, I worked really, really hard to get it. It's my 10th year in Nebraska right now, and I just now last year got what I would consider to be mediocre whitetail property. So whitetail hunting is hard to get proper, to get land in Nebraska. Like I said, you used to be able to hunt public, and now it's just every dude in the country is all headed out west because Nebraska's tags are cheap, and supposedly there's a lot of public land. Most of it's bean stubble. Well, it's what it is. I'm not going to complain too much. I love hunting, and I love everybody else that hunts. I'm glad they're around.
No, that's good. That's a good attitude, man. We need more of that, and we need that to permeate louder. So, like, that's a good perspective to have. I have two questions. do you have are you scheduled to be on Whitetail Cribs with Exodus Trail Cam yet, or is that a thing for you?
No, I don't think so. My buddy Damien was. Damien Riffle.
Oh, he was.
And
okay.
He's in Central Ohio there. He and I got together through the Working Class Bowhunter podcast through the team, and we have since hit it off, and he's an animal, and I'm kind of a fatter animal, but I'm still still a killer, you know what I mean?
Hey, animals are all different shapes. So
real bromance, huh? That's good.
Yeah, I made a meme that said, does anybody else, and I stole it from somewhere, but does anybody else try and breathe quieter so at Damien Hunt doesn't hear you fighting for your life when you're walking out of a canyon? Because the guy's got a resting heart rate of 3.
And you're just hoofing it.
Oh God, I'm almost ready to die. There's another podcast where we're laughing about it over there on Outdoor Drive, but
that's pretty good.
That's fun. Damien and I hit it off. The guy is a true killer, and we really enjoy hunting together. So we think we're going to try a little bit of elk next year if we can get that.
Where are you going to go?
New Mexico. I'm in the process of shedding the fat that's on top of my fat. And so if I can
get down,
I lose
layer.
The fat that's on top of that fat, then I'll try and turn the rest of the fat into muscle, and then maybe only have to ask him to wait up 2 or 3 times.
That's funny, dude. COVID put me in such shitty shape. It's terrible. Like last summer I was like, oh, gung ho, it's nice on a run. I was doing like 7-mile runs, and now I'm just not doing anything at all. 0. And you know, you throw the holidays on top of that, and all the cookies and cake and pie and cheesecake and, you know, Oreos, nachos, all these O things. It's good stuff.
Well, this has been a good winter for me. I've shed about 25 pounds here.
What'd you do? How'd you do it?
Oh, just not be an idiot, right? Just eat normal. I would just eat too much before. So I just ate normal and, tried to cut out some of the horrible things that I was eating in copious amounts. And it just kind of falls off of you, you know? I looked at myself in the mirror the other day, and I kind of looked like, you know, how in the 80s, nobody was actually, like, they weren't buff. They just weren't fat. So I kind of looked like a dad bought Magnum P.I. is what it kind of looked like.
That's, dude, that's great. That's like a great description. They're not buff, but they're just not fat. Oh, that's great.
Right, a little bit hairy.
For McDonald's, like, ruled the world. So how did you go from, like, you know, hunting average, regular old, okayest bucks to mature whitetails? Like, obviously something changed within you, or you made like a decision, but then what was the journey like? How did you go from, like, what was the leap, I guess, like?
Well, I think that's a several part question. So one of the first on that, I think, would be inspiration. And my inspiration at that point, and there might be some people that wouldn't say this out loud or whatever, but my inspiration at that point was Lee Lukoski, and watching these guys that made it possible to kill big deer every year. And you realize that he's not paying to hunt. I mean, he might have something else going on. I don't know about that, but the guy's not getting guided. He's guiding himself. And I watch other people around who were killing big giant deer in the area. And I had a local mentor taxidermist, Dave Inkin, there in Central Illinois, who, you know, when you're a kid, your brains really haven't grown in yet, but he would throw out tidbits every once in a while. And I sunk my teeth into one of his hooks one time, and the rest is kind of history. He just gave a little bit of good advice, and I latched onto it. And since I'm an obsessive person, when I started doing it, that's all that I did. When I was joking around earlier about playing pool, it was kind of a joke and kind of not a joke, because I played pool 10 hours a day for 2 years. And at one point I was ranked in the state of Illinois, like starting from nothing to that in 2 years. That's pretty good shot, you know, kind of. So when I transferred that focus onto deer hunting, the world kind of changed. The only thing that I kind of wish I would have done different is realized that I could have done it twice every year. I would quit after the first one. I still have another buck yet.
What were some of the aha moments? Like, what were some of the things, like, once the focus shift, how did you start putting the puzzle pieces together? What fell into place?
Okay. Well, I don't say, and keep in mind, trail cameras were a thing, but I wasn't utilizing them like I should have. And people killed big deer before there were trail cameras. You know, sometimes everybody forgets that. There were good hunters before then. And so that's the kind of hunter this guy was. So the little things that he put out there were very obvious, which are, what time of the year is it? It's November. Why are you here? Why aren't you in the tree? And a lot of guys hate on November. You'll notice that people hating on November are the guys, Damien, for example, he hates November, and he hates it because the deer that they are tracking, by cell cam or by trail camera or by heavy scouting, the deer that they have been keeping track of all year are going to leave. Well, back before all that intelligence was even possible, you hunted November because that's when the animals were going to be on their feet. So my main focus that very first year was don't go in the woods until November. And I've heard a lot of people say that they don't savvy that, you know, like, I think I've heard Cody, the lone wolf guy, say that a few times. He doesn't like it when people say don't hunt till November. Well, and maybe I'm misquoting him, but I don't like hunting until November, unless there's a reason. I mean, if I've got some sort of intelligence that's got a big deer in there, then I'll be out. I would be after him. But as a general rule, deer season doesn't start for me for big whitetails in Illinois until October 25th. And even that point, it's just kind of dipping my toes in the water. And then when November 1st hits, wild stuff starts to happen. So when I don't, as far as the revelations that I had, I didn't spoil any of my property. I didn't mess with it at all. I put my stands up early. And I knew the farm had been hunting it all my life. But there's a difference between hunting little deer. Deer and big deer. So I hadn't necessarily made those connections yet as to why I was hunting where I was. I would just hunt the biggest, baddest part of the timber. And I think on my third hunt of the year, I really got after one. I'll save that for later because I think you got a question to ask me. Mm-hmm. So I'll save that story for later, but, Don't overpressure and stop shooting the little ones. I mean, it's pretty simple. It's not about so much passing deer so that they'll grow. It's not shooting the smaller ones so that you're still in the stand when the bigger one walks by.
Again, the first time I've heard someone say that, and I don't know how much you follow OKS Hunter, but one of their slogans is never pass.
Dude, you are a genius at marketing. That never pass. And the whole okayest stuff, I love that. I love that.
But it's like never pass on, I'm making a memory, like just whatever the hell gets your pee hot, as my buddy Jared down in Arkansas says. That's what you're not passing on. And, you know, parlay that into, really, we're talking about deer, but, you know, make it whatever it is to you. But, no, you're the first person I've ever heard say that out loud that way.
Never even thought that?
No. It's never even occurred to me. I just learned something new too.
Well, how many times? Well, I guess if you've got the never pass shirt on, the answer might be zero to this. But I think a lot of people who are really trying to kill big deer as a target, I think that as a general rule, it's probably not the first deer that walked by you that day. Sometimes it is, but. How many times would someone have been bucked out in Illinois, for example, a two-buck state, or Nebraska, a two-buck state, or Ohio, a two-buck state? If you shoot the first 120 that walks by, which I know that's a different story. I just use that for an example. I'm not talking about the East Coast, you know, where the larger deer are. You shoot the first 120 that walks by, you're done. You don't get to be there for the big deer. So, yeah, it's a little different way of thinking, I guess.
Or you're hunting an area where a 120 is the big deer.
If that's the case, rock and roll, right?
Right.
Two years ago, I shot a 125 in Nebraska. It was Tickled Pink with him.
Mm-hmm. I think this season I've seen some of the biggest deer I've ever seen while in a stand with a bow in my hand. And so thank you, Greg. One of them just never got remotely close enough for me to even consider taking a shot. But then I experimented. I was like, well, you know, F it, I'm out here. He's right there. I don't know if I'm going to see him ever again. So I snort-wheezed at him. It didn't go well. He ran away. But I tried. And I also practiced snort-wheezing for like 6 hours the day before that and drove my wife absolutely crazy.
Dude calls me on the phone. He's like, listen to this. I'm like, what was that? That's my snort-wheeze. Okay. I've never even heard that noise in the woods before.
Tires.
Yeah, were you slashing tires?
I was just like, man.
Did you deflate a balloon?
I thought, well, this is the biggest buck I've ever seen. He must be the domino nut here. If I snort-wheeze at him, logic tells me, from what I've learned, he might want to come challenge this shit.
Yeah, he went, yeah, no.
Yeah, he's like, see, I'm out.
Peace.
And I was like, oh, well, whatever. He wasn't coming my direction anyway. So, maybe he would have turned back around. Unlikely, but
he probably thought that.
I always refer to deer as people. I always liken them to them. So that's coming on a little too strong, right? That's, if you're trying to pick up the girl, that's coming on a little bit too strong there. That's starting at an 8 when maybe you should have just asked. If you
so that's like
her.
Yelling, hey, yo, bitch, instead of saying, hey, sweetie, or something. Eric, calm down. You can't call women that. Oh, boy. Well, if you're Jesse Pinkman, maybe, but, you know, from Breaking Bad. Oh, boy.
Well, Pinkman. On the calling aspect, I'm a huge fan of the grunt call, and I've got nothing against the snort wheeze if it escalates to that point.
So that's a game of escalation, man. You're teaching me a bunch here. We're starting to be strong.
Snort wheeze at this deer.
I don't remember. Honestly, at this point, I couldn't tell you. I might have grunted at him too, and that wasn't working. I was like, "Fuck it, I'm gonna take it up a notch here," and I went right to that. So he was like, "No."
Well, that's not a terrible idea, unless maybe he was, like, he could see you. I don't like to do it when they can see me.
Nah, he didn't see me at all. There's not a chance from how my mind remembers it, mainly because his head was behind a freaking giant tree trunk. But anyway,
he probably thought it was that little buck sneezing, that's all.
Yeah, like minutes beforehand, I saw a little guy.
He just got done kicking his ass.
Yeah,
that deer ran away. He sneezed. That's fine. All the ladies went this way. I'm out of here. See ya.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Who knows? But, you know, that's one of those things. Like, it's good to experiment.
Can you guys make grunt sounds with your natural? Can you make grunt sounds naturally without a grunt tube? Like, can you do that?
Not really.
No, that was really impressive.
Dry throat,
well,
not good.
There is everybody, like, I always laugh. Everybody that says they can do it, they could do that in the truck driving down the road. Or they could do that drinking beer with their buddies.
Mm-hmm.
But when there's a 165 standing at 50 yards and you're at full draw and you have
their
no
throats in their hearts in their throat, there's no way they're doing a good grunt unless they've had a lot of experience around 160-inch deer.
I pulled that off twice on the same deer and kept spinning him and coming back around and spinning him and coming back around. You talk about pressure to be able to go and make it right. I couldn't believe I did it. Because every time I tried to do it on a medium deer, it's like,
Oh, that deer's balls just dropped. Go for that snort wheeze, quick!
Give him the snort wheeze!
Give him the snort wheeze! Strike! Oh, that's got to go on a shirt. Give him the snort wheeze. That's like, what's that movie, wheeze. Along Came Polly? Rain Man! And he just freaking misses.
Snort Don't wheeze. Worry about it, Ricky. Give him the heater.
Yeah, there we go.
Give him the heater.
You and Greg must be closer to the same age.
That was a good movie, man. Yeah. You got to watch it if you haven't.
That was a solid reference.
That was a good reference. Oh, God. All right, so that's good stuff, man. And honestly, like, we're learning a ton here. I think we're starting the new year off right with dropping some good wisdom and knowledge and experience. Whew. I think our audience ranges from, like, beginner. We have a lot of noobs and beginners, but we have some intermediate. And then you would mention, are we doing a tactic talk? Well, not tonight, but that's why I spun that up, because I thought, gosh, wouldn't it be great to get knowledge delivered to you in a silver platter where you don't have to sift through a two-hour-long show to get those nuggets. And it's from guys that have proven that they can effectively kill big deer. And so that's what that is. We'll have to jam out on a tactic talk or a couple of them. We'll launch that up again in like August probably, because right now, honestly, most people seem to have checked out. There's a lot of the hardcore guys that haven't. But if there's any knowledge you want to drop, that like we can talk winter camping a little bit, because I know you're into that. And, you know, maybe some things kind of correlate there with the late season.
Yeah, just talk staying warm, basically, is what we're talking about.
Yeah, right.
That's something that that I'm pretty, I don't know. If there was an area where I said I'm an expert at something that has to do with deer hunting, I would say that was it. Like, I don't get cold. And I've got a couple simple things that I do, and they might not work for everyone's situation, might not work for everybody's body type. I have no idea, but some of the easy things that I do are my boots. I wear rubber boots. Some guys like leather lace-ups. I don't. I wear rubber boots when I hunt whitetail, and I wear a size 11, and my boots are size 12 and a half. So
how much insulate you pack in those things warm in the cold? Because they get heavy then, right?
What's that?
Depending on how much insulate you have in there, they get
dude,
pretty heavy.
Dude, he was just going to get to it.
Ah, okay.
Just
okay.
Simmer down. All right. Continue,
well,
please.
It's less about the weight and more about the microclimate that you're going to create between your foot and the outside air. So if you restrict your blood flow by putting on too many pairs of socks and then squeezing them into your foot, it doesn't matter how many hand warmers you duct tape to your sole.
Nope.
If you restrict your blood flow, your feet are going to get cold. And I don't wear anything more than a cotton sock, just a white sock with a gray, you know, normal socks. And I put those inside that giant boot, and I can literally move my foot 2 inches forward, 2 inches backwards, half inch to the side, half inch to the other side. My foot just rattles around inside there. And that's what keeps your feet warm. The only other thing that I would say is that if I were going out in the teens or worse, which I do quite a bit, I do switch to a wool sock simply because your feet eventually will sweat. And if they do, then, you know, sweat equals water. Water equals three times convection. I don't know. Whatever, one way or the other.
It's a conductor, so it's going to suck the heat right off your foot. And I do the same thing here, you know, in the Great White North. I'll actually walk out with a thinner pair of socks on, and then once I get settled in, I'll kick my boots off and switch to a heavier pair of wool socks.
That makes some sense, for sure. And then, also, I'm all about puffy, packable down. So, packable down coats that stuff into their own pocket, I might have two of those. In addition to everything that I had planned on wearing, I'll have those with me. And then it's the obvious ones. That this isn't some revelation that nobody's ever heard of. You don't walk to the stand with your coat zipped. You don't walk to the stand with all your coats on. I really like a bib because I can put my clothes on, put my bibs on the outside of them, and then I can take my arms out of my coat, and then they just hang behind me. And then when I get to the stand, all I have to do is reach back with my hands and put my coat back on.
Yep.
And tuck it back into my bibs. It's all about creating those microclimates. But the puffy jackets, you have to, the last key to that puzzle, you can put on as many puffy jackets as you want. And if they're not windbreakers, then you got a problem. So you have to have one outside layer that's a windbreaker. And as far as hands go, I heard some people dogging on hot hands the other day. I don't know what the hell's going on there, but hot hands are the best thing ever, man. I'll carry a musk because I don't wear gloves, certainly not on my right hand. I don't wear gloves when I'm bow hunting. So my hands are in a pocket where there's a hand warmer and everything's fine. If a deer were to come in, so be it. Let my hands get cold. You know, if I have to do a 5 minute stare down when it's 5 degrees out, I'm going to regret that, but if I make it happen in the end, it's not really going to matter.
No, you'll be warming your hands up in the guts anyway.
That's right. That's That's right. Yeah, like the Star Wars movie where he cuts that thing open.
Yeah. Which one was that?
It's the second one.
Don't know.
That was a really confident answer, Greg. I'm not sure I actually trust you. That was too confident. Fucking liar.
Whatever.
That's funny. Dude, that's good. That's good advice. Who the hell's hanging on Hanover, by the way? What? You gotta be kidding me.
I don't know. They've saved a few hunts.
I keep a bag of hand warmers in my truck now. Like winter, I just have them in there. You never know. Like what if I crash?
Fleet Farm just had them on sale.
Yeah,
10-pack for $10.
Yeah,
can't go wrong.
It's like the one thing I overstock up on. I always have like a whole bunch left in my bin from gun or whatever late season. I got one of my late season bow bin and hand warmers everywhere. I don't hate on those things at all. In fact, so I use like one of the quarterback pouches. Right, I don't know what the hell they're called.
Yeah, it's a hand muff. I got one.
He's a hand muff. I use really thin gloves, or I use gloves.
You're talking about the tube you put your hands in?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I love absolutely. That. Absolutely. Best thing ever. It's the skin on skin, man. That'll keep your hands warm.
Mm-hmm.
And if one hand's cold, the other hand will warm it right back up. And it's all about keeping your neck, your crotch, and your feet warm, and obviously your core. But that's where heat's going to go out.
The next a big one. I have just a wool turtleneck sleeve. That's all it is. And I tuck it in under my shirt, under my back, you know. And then just so I don't have to wear it on the way in. But once I get to where I'm going, I take that out and I put that on. And it seals everything up real nice. A little wool neck warmer thing. I don't know what it's called.
I knew what it was called. A gaiter. If you wear a neck gaiter, you can take off, from my experience, 2 layers of what you would have needed before.
It's crazy. And so it's like sometimes if I forget I have it on, I walk out, I'm like, oh, no.
Fantastic equipment.
No wonder I'm so hot, you know?
Yeah, that's where you lose a lot of your heat. Yeah. If you don't have something covering your neck, you can have the warmest jacket in the world. If all the heat's escaping out that way, and you're going to get cold.
And it's important on the way into the stand to make sure that area is exposed.
Yep.
Right? Your armpits, your neck. If they're exposed, they'll keep you cool on the way to the stand.
Mm-hmm. You know, Greg's a big fan of merino wool, so he converted me this season. I dropped some pretty pennies on some merino wool stuff, and I actually just got some more for Christmas.
Well, it's nice because you can walk out to the stand with that. It breathes, but yet it keeps just enough heat on you while you're walking.
Mm-hmm.
And once you settle in, like Clay's saying, then you start putting your layers on.
Yeah.
And then you work with it from there.
The wool retains 80% of its insulatory value.
Mm-hmm.
Or insulative value, whatever you want to say, when it's wet. Yep. So even if you do get wet, that's why wool socks are often recommended. So.
Right.
It's good stuff. I don't know, Greg, what are you doing for late season? You're out there. What are you doing? What are you looking for?
I'd like to maybe wrap my hands around a deer with antlers, but we'll see. Still got a couple of doe tags I can fill. So pretty much anything goes right now. I don't want to shoot a little buck. And I've done my share of passing on little bucks this year and in years past. So probably in years past, I shouldn't have been passing on some of those little bucks. It took me a long time to actually shoot what I thought was good. But it's what it is. It's my thing, and I'll do what I want.
I'll do what I want, damn it. Do it myself.
You running trail cameras, Greg?
I am running trail cameras. I've got a couple out. Half the fleet's sitting in the basement right now. I should have them out, but we just finished up with a late doe-only gun season, and people are kind of roaming around all over, and it's still rabbit season. We got a lot of guys that like to rabbit hunt around here, so trail cameras will disappear then, too, and then once people start hearing about other people finding sheds, then they're roaming around and getting into places, so it's not a great time of year to keep a trail camera out, but I have a couple out in certain areas where I know deer are definitely coming through. So it's a good thing. I can see who's still
surviving. Can you use a Spartan?
No, I'm not using Spartan. I've got a good handful of Exodus, a couple of Moultrie, and some wild game. But nothing cellular. It's all regular, just SD card type cameras.
Well, I don't have any affiliation or anything like that.
Sure.
And I can't discuss as to whether one cell camera is better than another. All I can discuss is that I started using a Spartan this year as my first kind of dipping my toe into that.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about life changing. Like, well, it's a big deal.
Yeah, it's instant information.
It's wild, man. Absolutely crazy. Now, people say, you know, you can't trust your trail cameras because they'll lie to you. And that's true. but when it's going well, you know, right?
Like, right.
The deer don't have to walk by your camera. But when they are walking by your camera, it's confirmation that it's happening. And you used to have to let them marinate and stuff like that. I'm going full tilt this spring. I am absolutely jumping into that. And the only reason I'm staying was, like, it's not, like I said, I don't know whether Spartan's better than another one, but I could say this, it worked flawlessly for me. And since I've already got the program, I am absolutely sold on it, you know?
Yeah, it's hard
so
to get away.
If you ever go that way,
okay,
maybe a good way to go.
Sure, absolutely.
I'm dropping cell cams this season coming up, and I'm not going to do it like, you know, what I would compare to someone ice fishing, you know, looking out on their lake house, sitting in there drinking beer, and then, you know, waiting for tip-up to go and then running out there. Like, I'm not going to go hunt the moment I see something or what have you or use it that way. But for me, I don't have, like, where I hunt with Greg, it's 30 minutes from my house. So I'm not trying to drive 30 minutes to go check something or putz around, or even if it's close. I have some properties that are close, but I got two kids, man, and I got a day job and like five side hustles. So, like, I don't have a ton of time. I just need to get some extra eyes on some of these areas that I've scouted that I'm familiar with to just give me a better idea of which one to hit. And so I probably will drop one to two on a couple of different properties and see how that goes. And right now I'm eyeing up the, the Spy Tacta?
You were saying Tacticam.
Tacticam, Spy Point. I don't know the difference. One of the two. But a cell cam. Or buying a cheapie and throwing this whatever the little connector is on them.
Yeah. Just speaking from a guy who just learned all this last year, you will be shocked that what you learn is not, oh, I got to get in stand right now. The amount of intelligence that you gain and are able to connect the dots relating to movement versus all of the variables that have to do with hunting is crazy. Because before, you'd go check your trail camera a week later or 2 weeks later, or, you know, in some cases I'd let one marinate for 30 days in late season in the summer. When it's happening on your cell phone right then, forget about hunting, forget about people talking about whether you can cheat and know he's there. Just the watching movement happen versus the moon phase, versus the cold front, versus the temperature, all of those things happening, it is wild to see and how much you really learn right then. Shocked, absolutely shocked. It is the most valuable tool besides your bow, your arrows, and your release that a deer hunter can have right now. It's absolutely crazy. And I have no affiliation. I'm not trying to sell cameras here.
No, I don't either. Luckily, because that's
why I'm just trying to give tips. You know, yeah,
we don't have any affiliation.
One of the areas I can do whatever the hell I want. I'll do what I want. Damn it! You know, I'm gonna go buy whatever I can afford, honestly. And you know, the lower the dollar, the more I can deploy. And hopefully, there's a balance between, you know, what you're gonna spend on the quality. But I don't need some high def picture. I just need a picture. You know. But plus, if you have a cell cam, I think you'll know when it gets stolen too. Suddenly, it's taking a picture of someone's living room. Well, that ain't in Kansas anymore.
Right.
I'm not going to walk out there to not find it. I'll know. Oh, there goes another one. Right?
That happened to some friends. Yeah. They see him. People know what cell cameras are, so they're not dumb enough to walk in front of them. So somebody really is going to steal your camera. They climb up the backside of the tree and they get it. You just see a picture of the sky and then they shut your camera off.
Right.
Yeah. Damn it. Yeah. I know there's that. We talked about this before. There's a company that you can put a sticker on that says this is tracked by GPS, blah, blah, blah. I think it scares some folks away, but
yeah.
I think they've marketed so much now that everyone knows what it is. And who the hell is putting a GPS tracker on their freaking trail cam? Seriously, is that even possible? Can you even do that?
Could be.
There's got to be some sort of a track my cell phone tag thing.
Yeah,
that's what I'll say. Yep. This is hooked up to my iPhone. I'll find you. Oh boy. Well, you know, I think given the time on the clock here, I'd love to hear your most memorable hunt.
Okay. So I was getting ready to tell it earlier, and this was the one that started it for me. So I wasn't getting much outside help, and my cousin, who was probably 20 years older than me, she came and helped me put a deer stand up. And she's not a hunter. She just was there in case I died. She could tell people, you know, what happened. And she helps me put this deer stand up. I leave it alone. Long story short, fast forward to I'm sitting in this giant white oak tree on the edge of this ridge overlooking the edge of a bedding area. And at 4:30 on November 1st, I didn't recover until November 2nd, but on November 1st, 2007, 4:30 p.m., I hear some faint grunts coming my way, and a couple does kind of squirt over the hill next to me, and here comes easily the biggest deer I've ever seen in my life, because as a general rule, I was shooting the first thing that was coming out, and I didn't have any knowledge, prior knowledge of this deer, other than the fact that I lived in a great deer place with good deer ground, and if you bided your time, it was going to happen. So this deer is coming on a string, and he's going to walk in front of me at 20 yards. And he decides, I'm just getting ready to draw my bow. And bear in mind, I had lived in Wisconsin for a year or two prior to this. And that's where I learned what I would say, how to really shoot a bow. At that point, I was shooting very well. How well it doesn't matter, but I was shooting very well and very confident. At the time, I was shooting a Switchback XT, maybe. But I was feeling really good about what I was doing. And the deer, instead of crossing in front of me, turned and kind of sidestepped my stand. And I grunt stomped him, and he continued forward, you know, another 8 or 9 inches. And all I could see was the back two ribs as to what's going on. And I suppose people could call this unethical and call it whatever they want. But I had my feet all the way back against the tree where the tree and the platform meet. And I was probably leaned out at, I would say, a minimum of a 45 degree angle and way out. And I could see that the last two ribs on this deer, and there was a piece of ivy growing up the side of the tree that he was behind, and he was at like 26 yards. So at that point, I felt pretty good about it. And this ivy vine was at like 15 yards, and there was a little piece of green, a little leaf that was just kind of sticking off that ivy. And I said to myself, if I cut that stem off that leaf, I'll catch, you know, two ribs up, and it will be front liver, back of the lungs. And he was quartering away a little bit, so it was going to be certainly a fatal shot, but it wasn't going to be a double lunger anyway. I was going to get, you know, some lung and certainly a lot of liver. And I let go, and after I let go, everything slowed down. And I heard the echo, you know, it was kind of like a slow motion sound of when you let the bow go, it was just kind of, and I remember that arrow going and flying towards that ivy. And I saw that little leaf go ping and just clip off and kind of start float. It kind of popped it out away from the tree. I saw the impact on the deer. I wasn't totally sure, because instantly it's behind, you know, he's behind a tree instantly after that and hauling tail the other way. But I remember seeing that little green leaf just floating halfway down to the ground before I absolutely lost my mind. And that deer went 75 yards and crashed. I didn't hear him crash, so I gave him until the next morning. And my father and I went in to find him, and we saw coyotes in the general area as to where he was. And we tracked him really slow, and it was, I didn't know it, but I remember the blood trail pretty vividly. It was dark, dark red blood, so obviously a lot of liver, but I had cut some type of an artery or something that that helped him expire a little bit faster. And when we got to him, the coyote had just taken a nibble or two off his hind quarter, and it was absolute pandemonium for me. I had never done that before, and everything kind of came together because I had decided that was what I was going to do this year. And all these people had told me, well, if you do these things, it will happen. And it was a very, if you build it, they will come moment. It was pretty cool. It made it possible. And I was really proud of that hunt. And within that spot where that tree was, I put a stand back up in that tree this year, first time. Where that stand was, I've killed that deer was a 156, but he was really short-tined in a 10. He was a 156. I killed a 175, a 165, a 165. My brother's killed a 150, and my two deer ever. I killed a doe and a fawn my first year. Those animals all died within or were shot within 25 to 30 feet of each other. So it's just a little spot there on the farm that's really, really nice. And that memory won't ever go anywhere else. That was such a wild, wild thing for me that just kicked off what I have so much passion for today.
That's cool. That's a good story. I don't know if you know, but I got my first ever buck with a bow this season, and it happened to be on public land. And I got to chalk that up to being probably one of my most memorable hunts. And similar to your story, I've been listening to people on this show say, do this, do that. And hearing what Greg has to say along the way, this whole season, and went out on my own and applied everything that I've been learning. And there's some luck there. You know, I actually got to see a deer. But it all came together, and all that stuff added up, man. All those little things over time, it all allowed that to be a good hunt. So I can relate a little bit, but it certainly wasn't nearly the size of animal you're talking about. So I got to imagine that kicks it up a couple of notches.
That was pretty okay.
That's right, man.
You got it. That was pretty okay. You know, I don't know why this is coming to me right now, but so Austin Chandler is a friend of mine. I don't know if you know who that is, but he, mm-hmm. we lived together in college, and he had killed, at that point, he had killed a really nice deer. And I think, what I would call for the Midwest, a respectable deer. One was really nice and one was respectable. And, you know, he's 3 years younger than I am. So we lived in the same house together in college. And I remember texting him when I had shot this deer. And then all of a sudden we kind of were the next year or two, you know, we're kind of feeding off each other. And then all of a sudden he starts killing two a year. And it was like, whoa, you can do that? It was a lot of fun.
Awesome.
I'd forgotten about some of that.
That's cool. Yeah. His deer are huge. He have like a really cool, like,
he's got good
house
land
or something too, though. Like, I feel like I've seen some folks stay there at his place, and it looks like he's got a sweet bar or like trophy room or something.
Yeah, I think he's got a cool. I've never been to the man cave because every time I'm back in Illinois now, I'm hunting, right? And when I'm done hunting in Illinois, I'm back home, yeah. Back here trying to kill another deer. It's, I don't know. I think I'm missing a little bit of the camaraderie that I should be holding out for. But
well, if you ever want to stop in Wisconsin, we got some camaraderie here, and we'll be happy to throw back some bourbon with you now that we know more about it.
I used to live in Waukesha.
Not far away.
Yeah,
right down the road.
I grew up in Waukesha, so I know it well.
Yeah, so the Ojibwa Archery Club.
Okay.
Ojibwa Bow Hunters. That was in New Berlin.
Okay.
That's where I learned how to shoot.
Very cool.
No way, man.
Pretty badass little place. It had like three ranges. I was putting like 200 arrows into 3D a day while I was there.
Wow.
It was fun.
It is a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, man, thanks for being on the show. Thanks for like connecting with us and telling us your story and sharing your knowledge. And It was good. And just, you know, I'll reach back up. We'll get you on for a tactic talk and we spin that back up. And I'm sure there's a couple things we can jam out about there. And, you know, we're going into season two this year of Most Memorable Hunts. So yours will make the cut for sure. It was a good story.
Awesome, dude. Thank you. If you ever decide you're going to come out somewhere mule deer hunting, you want some advice on what to do, give me a holler.
That's my thing,
man. I've also got those videos up. I like to do pack dumps and things like that to talk some valuable stuff for people who've never been out west.
Yeah, I did check out some of your YouTube content, and it's pretty cool. You got video of your kids blood trailing, and I think that's awesome. It's great to have kids out there and seeing stuff aside from a television screen or a smartphone. So that was pretty cool.
I don't even know what that is.
Yep, that's good.
I don't even know what it is.
Perfect.
Man.
Keep them away from it as long as you can. But yeah, it's great to see their reaction, and it's a lot of fun. It reminds me of when my brother and I were kids following my dad around the woods. So it's a ton of fun to see that. And then yeah, your pack dumps, and then just the, you know, reliving some of your hunts. It's pretty neat. So where can we all find you?
It's just Buck Collector on Buck Collector Clay on YouTube and on Instagram. I've got some pretty fun stuff. I think I'm going to kill more deer intentionally next year, because I've got some plans on some videos that I want to make, and it doesn't have anything to do with killing the deer. It's more educational stuff. But
cool.
I'll see if I can't get that stuff worked out. Who knows?
We'll tune in, man, for sure. I've subscribed. I got the alert set up, so like. It's awesome. Thank you. And, oh man, what was
Ooh,
I going to say?
I appreciate
I was say
it.
One last thing, but I can't remember.
Stay tuned for me killing one with a spear next year, because that's happening.
Jesus. All right. Sounds good, man. Well, you have a good night.
I'm making the blade. I'm making it all.
Oh my God. That's awesome. Freaking hardcore. I'm going to end the live feed. Everybody, thanks for tuning in tonight. This will be in podcast land tonight. As you all know, that tune in regularly. We produce the same night we record. So stand by for that. And everybody have a great night.
Thanks for listening.
All right. Hey, happy new year, everybody. And tip of the week this week, stay warm. You know, if we think about what Clay had to say, the thing he's most expert in is staying warm. So the thing that stood out to me the most was like giving your feet some breathing room. I wear rubber boots myself, so that like really struck a chord with me. You know, you definitely don't want to pack your feet in too tight to your rubber boot. You're going to get cold. You're going to cut off that circulation. And I've definitely done that before. You think, oh, I'm going to buy these super thick, warm socks, because that's how I'm going to stay warm. And then you stuff them into your boots with your feet and your feet get cold and you wonder what the heck's going on. So, and you couple that with Greg's pointer about maybe wearing a thin sock on the way in and then changing it out when you get to where you're going. I think that's an excellent idea. One that I've done also. So that being said, that's the tip of the week. If you're doing any late season bow hunting, I know it's not super tactical, but it's super practical. And that's what I got for you. And what I wanted to get into then, is our giveaway that we did. We wanted to call out everybody that won and let everybody know that, you know, here's what we gave away. So if you're not familiar, we have what we call giveaway day here at Where to Hunt. And if you're a paying Patreon subscriber for $5 a month, you are then enrolled in a chance to be drawn for some prizes every 3 months. So I guess a total of $15 gets you into a drawing every 3 months. We take that money from our subscribers and we go buy stuff with it. So this time we gave a number of things away, some good products. So congratulations to Mao Yang for winning a Method saddle by Latitude Outdoors. Congrats to Alex Plu, $100 to Fleet Farm. Congrats, Austin Summers. He's been a guest on the show before. You won a Tacticam reveal. Congrats to a couple of folks, Tanzin, Austin Summers, and Noah Spillman for winning a free annual subscription to Spartan Forge. And then congrats to Matt Galbrecht for winning an OKist Hunter hat and hoodie of his choice. Congrats to Andrew Toigo, who won an HHA Virtus dropaway. I'm not sure if he'll use it or not. And then congrats to Noah Spillman again for winning a T&K bow sling. Boom, that's a good one. And then congrats to Austin Summers again for winning a bag of coffee. and you already got the Spartan Forge. So that's what we got to give away on this week's, or this quarter's quarterly giveaway. We do it every 3 months. So, you know, this quarter just started. So, you know, if you want to jump on, you got 3 months to jump into our giveaway. You can go to wheretohuntapp.com and go to our giveaway page. You can read the rules, see how it works. You can click on the link. It'll take you to Patreon, and you can sign up there. It's pretty easy to do, I think. No one's complained about it yet. And then when you sign up, I'll send you a koozie, a Where to Hunt OKist Hunter koozie, and a sticker. So that's what you'll get for signing up. And maybe I'll throw in some extra stuff that I got laying around here. But, you know, I get to those when I can. So usually I wait for like a batch of folks to sign up after doing one of these, and then I'll send a whole bunch of stuff out. So, yeah, that's what I got. Happy New Year, everybody. I am very tired. It's been a long day, and this is a super good episode. It's a great way to start the new year. And Greg and I will be doing these every week. We're going to move up our recording time from 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, or our broadcasting time, to 6 p.m. Central Standard Time, so I can get done with this a little bit earlier, spend some time with my kids. So that's what we got going on. If you want to be on the show, it's a live listener call-in show. You can call in every week. We do the show every Tuesday night. So if you want to call in and chit-chat with Greg and I, or talk to our guests, ask questions, share stories, whatever you got, you can call into the show. It's 262-757-4122. That's our call-in line. And that line is hot, you know, every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. now to 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. So hope to hear from y'all on the show. If you haven't already, give us a rating and review on iTunes if you got an iPhone. I think you can do it on Stitcher if you got an Android. So we appreciate the feedback. Thanks for all of that. And yeah, we're excited to be here this year. We got, we always have things cooking. So of course we have some things cooking. So you'll stay tuned for more. But have a great week and hunt public.